Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Welcome to Pop Culture Confidential. I'm Christina Yerling-Biruk. Steamy intrigue and ambition. No, I'm not describing my guest, executive editor Ryan McQuaid of Awards Watch, even though I probably could. Rather, Luca Guadagnino's movie Challenger, starring Zendaya, Mike Feist, and Josh O'Connor, battling it out on and off the tennis court. But Ryan is here to help me discuss all this because there is so much to unpack. How are you with the tennis racket? Everything sounds like innuendo when we're talking about this.
That's the thing. We did our Awards Watch show the other day and we talked about this movie and there was no way not to do innuendo at all or just get violently inappropriate. Which, I mean, if you know the Awards Watch team, this is a movie right up our alley, so like it makes total sense that we would go into the camp. But yeah, I mean, how am I with a tennis racket? I'm subpar with tennis. Like, it's not the sport that, I mean, I love watching it and I love playing it. But if you, and you just like as a back and forth, but if you make me get competitive, which is a terrible thing because as Christina knows, I can be very competitive, I will lose easily. Like I remember it was during college and we played like in just a friend of mine needed another person in a doubles tournament. And I was like, yeah, I'll do it for you, buddy. And I was so bad. I was like, I will buy all the drinks tonight. I will make up for this one way or another. So, how are you actually with the tennis? Are you pretty good at it?
I've been in dark movie theaters all my life. In terms of any sport, you wouldn't want to have me as your doubles partner. Although I think it's really fun to watch. It's one of my favorite sort of spectator sports. Yeah,
you know, it's one of those where my wife, she was like, as we were starting to date and everything years ago, she was like, there were two sports. She was just like, how can you watch that and think that it's compelling or entertaining? One of them was tennis. The other one was golf. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you got to understand, like, if you watch Roger Federer or Nadal or the Williams sisters, then you'll understand. If you're just watching two amateurs or regular people playing, it can be good. Don't get me wrong, but like, there's just something about watching great tennis, to coin Tashi's.
And everyone from you know, McEnroe to Boyer to Serena.
And Sampras, yes, like you know.
The personalities. It's also such an individual sport. The style. The style of the spectators in the stands. I mean, everything about it is intriguing. So I like the sport, but you would not want to have me as your partner.
I think the same. I haven't picked up a racket maybe in like 10 years. So, but I've watched enough tennis. I think tennis movies are really fun to watch. And they should make more of them because they are great movies for power dynamics and intrigue, and in case of this movie, they can be really, really sexy at the same time too.
Thank you so much for joining me for this. It's so fun to have you. So the movie's been out this weekend, so hopefully you guys have seen it, because we're gonna just go crazy with spoilers if we need to. But let's start Tell me a little bit about your thoughts on the plot of the movie.
Yeah, I mean, this movie was delayed because of the writers and the actor strike, and it was supposed to come out last year. And I mean, I Eric and I felt pretty good about maybe that you and I and the rest of us would have probably seen a Venice to Telluride situation maybe, but it didn't happen, and they kind of just went off the fact that they're using Zendaya all in the marketing because of her stardom, and also just off of the success of Dune 2 that she's had this year.
And
And
wow, the marketing she's doing for the clothes on the red carpet,
I
every
mean,
tennis theme thing. I mean, I'm so happy that they waited for post-strike for us to
to
see
be
that.
fair, she is the Awards Watch team. We did a movie star sort of like stock game, and we last year. And I think we held her stock as a quote unquote movie star, as a person that not necessarily could open a movie, because I think I can safely say she can open a movie. And she did with this one, because this was the number one movie at the box office. It's about, does she have that movie star thing that will gravitate us to, if she's in a project, I gotta see it. It's a must-see thing. You know, it's kind of what we had running for such a long time with various leading actresses that were quote unquote considered maybe America's sweetheart, or that were just bankable and put in pretty much any kind of film. And for the most part, she's done Euphoria, which is outside of probably anything that those other actresses ever did, and she's won two Emmys, but that's still an ensemble piece, and even though she's the lead. And then for her movies, she's done bit parts in Spider-Man movies and very small, I would say, supporting roles in these Dune movies, in the large scope of those movies. And so I think that this, and she's did like Malcolm and Marie, but like, I don't want to talk about Malcolm and
No.
Marie. Nobody should. So
She's
this
not
is
the
like,
problem with that
she's,
movie, though, but
no,
we can move on.
it's called the screenplay. But this felt like at the time in which we did that episode last year, this was the movie to pinpoint where we could be at with Zendaya as the movie star, as the person that is the first billed person on the marquee. And I think for the most part, as she also produced this film as well with Sony and Luca, she does a really great job. She's very good. And this is a very different character than anything you've seen her play before. This is a different character than we've seen Mike Feist or Josh O'Connor play before, too. And I think that I had certain expectations because I think Luca Guadagnino is a pretty reliable, dare I say, becoming one of my favorite living directors, because he does things unconventionally and always keeps you guessing, right? You think you're gonna, oh, how do you follow up, a bigger spot? Oh, well, you do Call Me by Your Name. How do you follow up the Call Me by Your Name, this coming of age, queer story, love story? Oh, well, you do a remake of Suspiria. Well, how do you follow up Suspiria? Well, you do Bones and All, you know what I mean? And it's kind of the meld of those two. And then how do you follow that up, this kind of bloody bone crunching experience? Well, then you follow it up with one of the sexiest movies to come out of the last couple of years, and you have this whole a massive immersive experience with, I think, him at the height of his powers. This is like, I felt like Guadagnino going full, just like insane mode, throwing everything at the kitchen sink. It's a $55 million budget film, and you feel all of his decisions just being kind of thrown in there. Amy Pascal, the producer, and Zendaya talked about they wanted to find a director with a singular vision to make this movie,
We got
and
one.
they got one, because I think the tennis sequences in this movie are absolutely extraordinary. Some of the best directed sequences in maybe any sports movie in the modern era in the last 25 years, and definitely maybe just some of the best directed scenes, period, this year. The editing, the cinematography, absolutely just essential pieces to this film. The Reznor and Ross score is the fourth character of this movie. The way in which that propulsive music is used as both inner and external uses throughout the film, I find to be fascinating. But then, of course, it just also comes down to these extremely flawed, devilish performances. And all three of them, I think, are fantastic. And it might be all three of their best performances to date, if not some of the best performances, because O'Connor's had a ton of performances that I really do like. He's in Alicia Rohrwacher's film right now, La Chimera, that's just being released, that we saw at Telluride. And that's the polar opposite of Patrick in this movie. And Feist, everybody knows from West Side Story, and I think him as Art here is fantastic. But no, Zendaya as Tashi, there's just the way she which she looks, and her it, they say it says much more than these bumbling buffoon boys, these little white boys,
Her little white boys,
that
yeah.
good little white boys that they have to they are the ones always talking.
In order to get her career, her ambition, she can't play around like those little spoiled white boys. I want to mention that the screenwriter is Justin Kurytzkus, who is married to our favorite Celine Song, the director,
Yes.
writer of Past Lives. So let's get into that after how these two have written these two films about three, not three ways, but triangle, love triangles in a certain sense.
Well, three way there is a three way in this one,
There
so
is there.
you're not far from that.
Before we get into that steamy stuff, I just want to say also and echo what you're saying. This is, for me, absolutely my favorite Luca film yet. Now, I'm a
Really?
sucker
Wow.
for his, yeah, I'm a sucker for his obvious metaphors, be it peaches in Call Me by Your Name or churros or grunts on the tennis. He's combined the two things that I really love, the sexy beasts of A Bigger Splash and the longing and the love story in Call Me by Your Name. This is like that, a coming of age film, but with more coming. Another innuendo, but you know what happens after you've come of age, so to speak, and that doesn't always end well. I thought a lot about Anatomy of a Fall and what it means to have a relationship where you're not equal in ambition. And I just love that we're exploring that in these movies, and particularly that it's women who are exploring that in terms of their partners. Tashi is a character that's so fascinating. I love her, but she's also really difficult. And I love that Zendaya wants to play this. I mean, this is someone whose ambition will go over everything. My favorite character is Patrick. He is just flirty and cocky, and he's kind of like the Armie Hammer Oliver in Call Me By Your Name. He comes into this group, he's a little more wild. And I have to ask you, Ryan, did you? There's a shot at the beginning of the movie where he scratches his arm, where he has like a. Was he saying that he was like a heroin addict? He has this big blue.
I don't know about that. I mean, I think that he's probably, sometimes with these, knowing a lot about athletes and reading about just how difficult the road can be, there could be interpretations of that for sure. I mean, it does feel like when he comes to Stanford, he seems like he is not necessarily high on anything, but high on definitely on his own. He's high on his own supply, that's for sure, because he's the one that gets to be successful while both Art and Tashi are at Stanford, right? And so he's I think that a downfall of that character, and I mean I don't believe that it would be maybe heroin. I think it just because yeah. Because he probably wouldn't be able to qualify, because I know that they do drug testing. But it is about scars. I mean, like, it definitely could be about just, the scars that are left in the past, because all this movie is doing is metaphor. I mean, this movie is going back and forth. It's nonlinear structure and placing breadcrumbs in the past and even in the present to explain these characters. And Eric on the Awards Watch show, he talked about how if you read the script for this movie, which is an excellent script, the first page is just about who these characters are. And you don't do that because it's up for the interpretation of the actors to be able to go and grab that, or for Luca as the director coming in to be able to find those. But, you know, Curtis had his own envision. He collaborated extremely well with these actors as well as with Luca, because Luca came in, from what I understand, and put his own Luca's specialties to this, because I think a lot of the queer elements of this movie are Luca Guadagnino at its finest. I think also the film techniques and being experimental, being this Italian filmmaker using the resources that Sony gave him. They wanted a visionary and they found it. And I think that, you know, you mentioned Anatomy of a Fall, and that we had that wonderful conversation last year. And if your listeners haven't listened to it, they really should go back and listen to it, because we talked a lot about marriages and power dynamics within marriages, and how there's various different kinds of marriages. And this one feels different than any of those last year, but it feels very close to that one, I guess, the most. But it's another layer added to it, because from Tashi's perspective, she is this prodigy who is, I think, the next Serena Williams. Is, and she's come from really nothing. She's had to work hard. She is a Black American tennis player, and the rules are different, and female, yes, and the rules are different for her and her station than these two boys who come from privilege, who aren't necessarily as talented. They're better as a duo, interesting enough, than they are as singles competitors. And yet she has this injury that causes her to lose her career. She shifts to being essentially arts, not only just her manager, you know, coach and manager, but then his wife, his wife, and they have a child together and everything. So by this point, when you see in the future, she has all the control of that relationship. Art is will do anything that she says, because he's kind of always wanted that, weirdly enough, without the tennis. She's obsessed with the game. He's obsessed with the American dream, and the falsehood of that,
the partnership,
partnership and the commitment and all that, and thinking that it is a partnership, and that's not the case. And I think that there's an interesting discussion about so many different things. But when I think about their relationship, I think about how obsessive Art is. And I think Mike Feist is the best in this film. And I think the Art character is fascinating. And he's also the most dangerous, more than Patrick, because he's the one that instigates everything to what we see in the present. And then he is content and almost submissive, very much submissive to being this kind of traveler through a multi-million dollar career, and being able to say that when he's done, I'm done, we're done. And she's not done with tennis, and I don't think she'll ever be done with tennis. It's part of her DNA, and that's not the case for him. And I think,
yeah, when he says that in the hotel room there, and he says, "You're going to be mad, but I want to quit."
Yeah, but the way he like slides to her, it's almost like he's a pet at times, you know, like a lap dog to her.
But there you can see that she's like, the disappointment in him and what this means for their union and what happens after that is a huge moment.
Well, there's no love.
She looks at him and you can just see, and there she's absolutely amazing. You were saying how she looks.
Yeah.
There you can see every emotion of, how am I going to get through this? What am I going to do? A new plan is forming. Yeah.
Just the nonverbal cues that she's giving throughout the film. I was thinking back to, I said this on the Awards Watch, and I'll say this and I'll expand on it too. I was thinking a lot about Molly Burkhart, and I was thinking a lot about Lily Gladstone's performance in there. That's a performance that is about also a woman suffering within the confines of her marriage. And we talked about that a lot when that film came out, about how the movie is seen through her perspective. She may not have the dialogue, but she has the silence that women in those sort of dynamics don't have to have because they don't have the power to speak. In this case, because she's not a professional tennis player, she's just a manager. She's essentially there is no love between them anymore. It's all business. And so people kind of know who's really running it, but at the end of the day, he's the one getting the autographs. He's the one on the
But she's
billboards.
also so much better than him.
Yes, she is. Oh, she's better at him as a tennis player, as a businesswoman, everything. She is a goal-oriented individual. She takes all the energy of being a prodigy and puts it into this man. And this man is deciding when he wants to throw away her dream. And especially this white man who as I watched the film, I was like, this white man is preying upon this black girl and using her fame and her fortune and whatever she might have. Like when they're not talking about how pretty she looks, for the most part, they're talking about like, oh, she's going to get this deal and she's going to go on tour and then she's going to go to this college and then she's going to do this. They're talking about her plan and she's already steps ahead of him, but that's what he's so curious about.
Let me ask you this. If she wouldn't have gotten hurt, the Tashi character, would she still have been hanging around with these babies?
I think Art would desperately try to hang around with her. I don't think that she would. I
I
think
don't
that
think
she
so
got
either.
stuck. I think she's perfect more with Patrick because they both have passion. Patrick's downfall is his inability to adapt, inability to basically concede. He's a wild card.
He's a
He
wild card.
doesn't
He
like
doesn't
com
have the
he doesn't like
focus if he doesn't
he
want
doesn't
to.
have focus. He doesn't want to be conventional. He doesn't want to change things, but he's also, yeah, he's not focused enough because he's,
But he's much sexier and he's much more of
yes.
a challenge for her.
Yes, but also too, and I know that we've talked a lot about the marriage, but these two boys just want to fuck each other. I mean, like at the end of the day, that's what this really is all about. I mean, this movie is about how do you not see? And I think she knows that too.
Oh, but she knows that
Tasha,
from the minute she walks into that room. She's testing them the whole time. She asks, "There's no more beer." She looks at them like, "Who is going to leave the room to get the beer and be alone with him?" Then she's testing. You can see that the beds were pushed together even before she came in there. She says, "I don't want to be a home wrecker," that she doesn't mean just between friends.
No, I totally agree. I think she sees that the best part about Art is Patrick's worst qualities, and his worst qualities and Patrick are what make Art so great. They are both they that's why it's so funny that like when we first see them, they had won a doubles tournament and they're hugging and they're all and it kind of bookends with a hug, really, when you think about it, when you see them, because they're all over each other. They're eating as much phallic food in this movie as possible, like ice cream and bananas and churros.
Churros.
I mean, like, yes, Luca is very on the nose with symbolism,
I love it.
but it's the right way to do it. Like, it's not pretentious. It's not like, I'm not trying to throw this person under the bus, but I'm just gonna say it's not like when I watch Ruben Östlund and like the message is clear and right there. It is a detail that is added to the overall aesthetic that what Guadagnino does, and it's perfect. It's perfect little things, and they're also memorable. Like the churro scene has now been talked about. It's my background for this episode. But it's not even about the churro. It's about the scooch of the chair that Patrick does with his foot to get Art closer to
And
him.
also the direction. And I was here listening to Luca talk about that this is modeled on the 50s screwball comedies, how fast they're talking. like bullets of conversation they have between each other, which in the screwball comedy is between, you know, like a Katharine Hepburn, a Cary Grant. I mean, it's sexy when you have
Yeah.
that rapport between two people. So he's not just doing the churros metaphors and the sweat. It's also that they can talk to each other. You know, they have a language. They have a
Yeah.
language when they speak. They have a language when they eat. They have a language when how they communicate with each other with that ball we're going to talk about at the end. I mean, they have a language which is so much more relaxed and sexy than it is with Tashi.
Well, and also too, within that era of those screwball comedies, lies like directors like Howard Hawks and Billy Wilder, who were able to skirt the Hays Code and try to
Exactly.
make these messages, these innuendos ex about sex and ask questions about power dynamics and love and everything in a much more overt and interesting way, because it couldn't be just outright. You know what I mean? Because of the rules that are put on
And
them. And
this
so,
movie has no outright sex.
no, yeah, there's not, for a movie that, and this is kind of the interesting thing too, because, you know, as you and I, Christina, I mean, I saw this movie like a month ago, and I think everyone's just been kind of holding in their thoughts on it. It's fascinating that people. Fascinating how people get angry at certain films because there's so much sex in it. They get m mad at certain films because there's not enough sex in it. It's like people don't know what the hell they want. And
Saltburn.
yeah, ex Saltburn, Poor Things, this, like, let's just embrace all di sex is different to every single person. So the idea, again, eroticism as well too. So the idea of this being a flowing tapestry, and Luca is more subdued, but yet it's the right choices. It's about the choices the director makes and how that fits in the story, how it fits the vibe in which it's telling. Like, I think that the three-way scene was used in the marketing perfectly, because it gets you to invite into the psyche of these three characters rather than being some sort of titillating thing that could be kind of vapid and empty. The kiss between the two guys it says a lot more than about the outcome of the rest of this movie, more than, like, you know, more than a lot of other movies would just have the overt, like, let's all of them have sex and then it doesn't lead anywhere, because then it would actually be more complicated and kind of just wrong for what we see. And if then that, like you were talking about, Tashi then goes and sits back. She's got this grin on her face. It's the same grin she has at the end of the film. And then she's just watching these two, and then she's like, okay, well, have a
She's
good night.
always known
She knows
more about
she
them
what
from
she
the
wants.
beginning. Yeah. She's known
Yeah.
about
And
them as people, as players, as boys, as she knows.
but then also that scene being an awakening, really, for the two of them, right? For Art, that becomes the moment when he becomes obsessed with the idea of this girl. And this is also the point where he can't get Patrick out of his head, on the tennis court. And Patrick can't get Art out of his head because he wants to fuck him. Like, that's literally how it is, because then we see so many moments where both of them are coded, like the way Mike Feist sleeps or crawls on the bed. His, for lack of a better word, his ass is in the air. Like, he is this, like, bottom that is just needing and wanting something consciously, unconsciously. And it's like being called out into the wild. And then you have
And
Patrick, who is this,
saunas
well,
and
I mean, we can talk about the sauna scene, which is maybe the scene of the year so far, because, you know, and I just came on for the Civil War discussion, and we talked about the Plemons scene being
yeah,
the scene of the year, and now this is a scene of the year contender, because
a good year.
it's really good so far for those, you know, because those scenes encapsulate so much within what the movie is trying to say with its overall message. And I mean, we see this with Patrick, where he's alone. He's kind of, it seems like he's chasing these two now. He's having a blind date in the bar, which he knows they're staying out at this point because he knows how much money they make. and everything. He is going to practice and waiting in this locker room, and there's all these naked guys around him. He's on a dating app. He swipe. There's a hesitation on the guy that he sees on the Tinder app, and he kind of swipes right. But he's there, and he's not looking for those guys. He could have any other guy. He doesn't want them. He wants Art. So he finds him in the sauna, and then, yeah, I mean, he's willing to have it all lay out, and Art's not comfortable with that. But I think of the look that Patrick gives Art when Art stands up, of this, please take off your towel. Please let me see what I saw when I was 12, when I introduced you to your sexual awakening. We had another awakening. I'm not done with this. And then Art's so oblivious to all of this too. He's super just passive and kind of, you know, going through the motions. And then, yeah, that tennis scene, the way the ball is placed, it opens up kind of everything for Art at that point, both, I think, tennis-wise, the realization of his marriage, and the realization of who he really needs in his life, which is his best friend. And the realization
that Patrick is willing to tell him this, not to be mean, but to be, I want you.
Well, he also has nothing to lose. Like, that's the thing. Like, Patrick will go to the next thing. Like, Art's whole career is based off this challenger. You know, it's based off this match between the two of them. And they both know that. I mean, that's where I think the desperacy in Tashi going to Patrick, wanting to still, because she has definite attraction to him still as well, is drawn to him like a moth to a flame, like because
both
of his spirit.
Sex scenes, not the one in the car. The ones with Tashi are not fulfilled as the scenes
no, they're
you
not
were
fulfilled.
Describing of them, their kiss, their steaminess, their hunger for each other, so much more than anything when she's involved.
But she can play tennis with Patrick. Every scene that she's with Josh O'Connor, because that's the thing, is that in the movie is describing that every conversation is always tennis. It's always on. She's never turned it off. You know what I mean? It's like when you hear actors talk about their method. They're always on. They're always on. They've never turned it off. They never shut it down. That's what she's doing. Completely, that's what she's doing. But she finds that she can do it more with Patrick. But with Art, she was able to easily get to those goals, that all those obtainable materialistic goals that really then don't add up to anything, because once a career is done, all you're left with then is an emptiness of the game.
But even the sex scene in the little dorm room.
Yeah.
There, she doesn't want to continue with Patrick because he doesn't want to talk tennis.
He wants to have sex. You know what I mean? And but he also undercuts her. And that's where I think Patrick's wildness kind of gets the better of him, is that she knows how good he can be, but he's the only thing in his way, right?
But probably with a bunch of other things. She has no respect for either of them in different ways.
No, no, she doesn't.
This is not the sound of a stream running through the mountains. It's water from a leaking pipe trickling down a stairway. That's not a frog splashing into a lake. It's a piece of sheetrock falling into a puddle on a kitchen floor. And that's not a hiker taking a deep breath of mountain air. It's a homeowner gasping at the sight of a $12,000 water damage repair bill. 40% of homeowners have experienced water damage. Protect your home with the Moen Smart Water Monitor and Shutoff. Moen.
One thing, does she know, do you think she knew that Patrick was going to come to New Rochelle?
I think so.
I think so too.
I think these people are so obsessive with one another.
She's asked for one thing the entire movie, and that is, I want to see great tennis. And great tennis is a relationship. It's sex.
Because she's asked that from them from the beginning, when they're on the beach, and they're talking. She said, "I just want to see good tennis."
Art is not playing good tennis until that scene.
He's not been playing good tennis for a long time, you know, and even his His physical therapy and everything feels like he's going through the motions. And so whether it's conscious or not that that Patrick is there, I think that there is a little bit about Tashi wanting it overall by the end. And yes, I think she wants an easy match, and that's easy, but I think she realizes by the end when they get over the net, she's like, she screams as loud as when she's serving an ace in her amateur days. And I think that that's just a brilliant touch because it can be interpreted many ways. It can be interpreted that like this, they're finally gonna get maybe back on the right path. Maybe this is what they're always meant to be, is together. What their futures hold after that, who knows? But she got what she wanted, what she got these two to finally understand what real tennis looks like and how it can be played if you just throw everything else away. When it's not about money, or it's not about sex, or it's not about power dynamic, it's just about two people on a court serving a damn ball. And man, when we watch them play tennis throughout this movie, this five set match, it's so goddamn good. And it between the score and between
The cinematography,
just
the perspective of the ball.
the perspective of the ball, I love the shot. It's almost like it's above glass the way Luka does it, where they're both on their sides of the tennis court and the camera is above them as they're moving. It's yeah, it's I don't think I've seen most of this ever done in a tennis movie. It lends itself to definitely wanting to see it again in IMAX, because I could only imagine sort of like I was watching this movie and I felt, because the way the camera was moving as if it was the ball at times. Christine, I don't know if you've ever seen this movie, but it was reminding me of the Wachowski Speed Racer,
Oh, I
the
haven't seen
almost
that.
the visceralness and the that movie's much more colorful, but there's a lot of the camera moving with the race cars and everything there, and it's sort of like a dance, right? And there's something majestic and beautiful about those cars moving in place, and the way in which the Wachowskis use that then to weave into their narrative, the way the ball is used, or Patrick's perspective or Art's perspective throughout the tennis match. Luka Guadagnino does the same thing here, and it's such a brilliant choice to do, rather than just stationary camera, have us as the audience feel just like that. Like we are in, it almost feels like a damn video game at times, the way that we're in there, but it's to then feel and hear the emotions, and also to feel the impact of that tennis match.
And it's a tennis match in a challenger match or whatever it's called at La Roche. This is not like McEnroe versus Borg or
This is
US
in
Open.
Wimbledon. Yeah.
This is the, for me, the most exciting fictional tennis I've seen in terms of just the beauty of it. I was like on the edge of my seat.
Can I ask you something? Because I think that most audience members aren't going to be like you and me and be like, maybe have seen a Luca Guadagnino film, or knew what they were getting themselves in for. Because I want to talk to you about the score, because I think we have to talk about the score. When it started doing house music, from any club in an around, I was watching it in Austin. I was like, am I at the clubs right now? When I saw the film, the idea of it, that tennis is always on, but using that music, how did you feel about that? Because I felt that it is jarring at first when you're like, oh, this is, but as the movie went on, I was like, every time it clicked on, I thought it was like, this is so genius and so smart of using this as like every conversation, everything. I mean, I do think the sound mix does cut some of the dialogue from it, but I was curious what you thought of just Luka's decision with the Reznor and Ross score in terms of the tennis is always on. What did you think about that?
Oh, it was like giving me a shot of tequila. And it gave me the adrenaline kick that I wasn't expecting when I went in. I was expecting steamy, I was expecting sort of a love triangle of some sort, but to feel like I was on an adrenaline tequila kick for 2 hours was the best thing, and that was very much because of the music. I think that in another director's hands and other composers, they would never even have thought of it.
Yeah, I mean,
He wanted a rave party.
yeah, and I mean, but what's so interesting too is it's mattered throughout almost every conversation. But what's interesting too about the Reznor raw score, and I actually think that it's maybe the touch that no one is talking about, is how Tashi has her own music, and it's played twice. It's played when she's in that kind of storm, right?
All right.
When and with her and Patrick and everything, like that's not the tennis music there. It's kind of conveyed later in the film, but early on, when she's under that tree, her rehabilitation is not going well,
And she looks at her scar.
and she looks at her scar, and I think she realizes a pivot is going to have to happen. And that's where you can get caught up with these two boys controlling the narrative through their loud actions. But it's the subtle actions that she does, or the references to herself, or just having a moment like that in the movie is so important, because then it centers the film back to, like, no, every decision that these two dum-dums have made have never come actually from their brain. It has been planted as a seed of obsession, or it's just been planted in general by her. Like when Patrick is giving her in that alleyway this idea of her switching from art to him, she's already thinking, because she's checked out of this marriage. She knows what. She hopes that art, because it's easier. It's easier to stay in this mode because you're familiar with it. Change is hard. But she knows that she's not done with the sport. She'll never be done with the sport. The sport is in her blood. She will be coaching prodigies like herself. And honestly, that's what she should be doing. But when Patrick gives her that offer, even though it's clearly an offer that she can't take and won't take, it's the offer that she wants, because she's been thinking about that. So, and she knows, if she knows that he's there, and she knows that he's going to face art, she then knows too that he's going to probably offer this. But she also knows too, based off of, the past and everything, that she's going to hook up with him, because she can't, because she's drawn to him. There's a part of her that's still connected to him, just like she is to art. I find it really also interesting that not a lot of people are talking about, just again, like, that she has a child, and she has a family and a life, but it all feels like it's generated out of a machine, rather out of necessity for an image, rather than it is out of passion. Like, I don't think she loves art. I don't think she ever really did love art. Like, I know that that sounds harsh, but
I am a
but
little bit more inclined to say that I do think that she has with love or whatever, but that she has a lot of empathy for art. Because I do think the idea to get him to play at New Rochelle, and as she tells Patrick, in order to boost his confidence that he really needs it, I think that that is that honestly she would like to see him happy for her sake too, happy with tennis, so that he will go on. But let's talk a little bit about the screenwriting, because there's some choices here. How did you feel about the constant time jumpings and the chyrons and the dates and the having to look at the wigs to sort of figure out where we are?
I gotta tell you, I thought that the time jumping was perfect. You know what I mean? Like, this is a 13-year jump, and I thought that the way in which they kind of did it was perfect, because if you watch tennis like you and I have, we watch these athletes from a very young age, and we see them mature and we see them grow, but we see the subtle changes over time. And I think that in the sequences with Art and Patrick when they're younger, the film is lit almost in a different way at Stanford and at the night at the beach and in the hotel room than it is in the beginning than in the time forward. And as the film sort of, there's almost like this remembrance or dusty time feeling to the cinematography that almost then fades away as we get into the more realistic modern day stuff. And so I thought it was great. And I think that, we didn't need any de-aging makeup. We didn't need super prosthetics or anything. We just needed to kind of have the subtleness and then also the maturity of the way in which they both look. Like O'Connor starts off, I think, a little bit more muscular and then becomes scrawnier. And obviously the outfit is very, like I just picked this up at Walmart, to perform tennis. And then Mike Feist becomes bigger because he's got the resources. So it's realistic in terms of how these two's paths would go in terms of the money, the
And she
power,
has the
the influence.
Chanel
I mean,
espadrilles
like
and the haircut and the whole.
it's like watching modern tennis by the time at the end, because you're just like, well, yeah, this would be like, what if, Rafa Nadal had to play a challenger and his whole family showed up in the middle of nowhere? Like, this is how it would be. No, that they wouldn't be living in their car like this amateur, or this, guy trying to barely make the cut for the U.S. Open or whatever, or Wimbledon. They would be at the very nice hotel that's like 5 miles away, and they would live very comfortably in the hotel suite that they do.
Which is also a
So.
point. They don't even have a home. They're living out of hotel. I mean, they're living for the sport and for the tours. They're not living. They haven't made a home together. And of course, we have the tennis racket ball signal, which of course is the entire ending, which in someone else's hands could have been a really corny thing, don't you think?
Oh, I think, yeah, I think the sending wouldn't work if it was anybody else,
No.
honestly. Like, I mean, it just makes sense. Like, that's the thing. It's like the Luka has memorable endings. He really does. I get mad at I got mad a little bit on the rewatch of Bones and All, in 2022, because I feel the movie it should have ended maybe 10 minutes before when they're on the hill together, and it just ends on this beautiful note, and we don't see, like, her have to eat Chalamet at the end of that. Spoilers for Bones and All. Because I just thought that, like, emotionally that was the right move, and I felt like maybe like the studio maybe added that extra part to it, but it felt still within Luca, but it just was a little bit extra. But then, like, watch the ending of Suspiria, or watch the ending of A Bigger Splash, or watch Call Me by Your
Call Me by
Name.
Her Name is the
Yeah,
best
like
ending of
of
the.
the bunch, but like, he's deliberate, and you only can feel like he can get away with those kinds of endings. That's kind of the perfect thing about Luca, is he knows how to stick the landing, and literally he sticks it here with these two going over the net. It's great. I love it. I think it's fantastic. I think it circles back to all the things about these three, about these two guys, about her obsession with winning great tennis. I don't know where it would go after that, because I really don't care. I just think, like, some movies just have a great ending, and I'm not thinking about where they're going next.
Do you think
But
anyone will be able to put a ball in the center of a tennis racket without
I
someone
mean,
thinking you slept with my wife, you asshole?
you're throwing this game.
Yeah.
I miss you too. You know what I mean? Like, it felt like there's so many things said
Well,
in
everything
that
is said then.
moment. Everything is said within it, that gesture. And it's well, it's not even like the ball there. It's right. Oh no, it is, because he has an unorthodox serving,
He
and then he
usually
goes to
does
the
it
sort
like
of
behind his
oh.
back.
Which is so interesting, right? Because it's like, again, it goes back to how unconventional Patrick is with the racket, and then how standard Art is, and how both of them need each other to find the balance in between. It's all about balance. So, yeah. I love it. I mean, you obviously loved it too. I was.
Let's talk a little bit about Justin and Celine and the fact that they made these incredible movies a year apart about incredible trios of people longing and loving and not getting each other. And don't you just want to have dinner with them?
Well,
I'll be the third one in that relationship.
I have had the chance to sit down and interview Celine Song, and when she's just a lovely person, and I actually got to see her again earlier this year at the Critics' Choice Awards, and she's super nice, and she was taking in obviously her big moment with her film Past Lives. They're completely different films in terms of the dynamics and power, but what it is interesting is how Celine Song sees her husband in that film and how Tashi is written. And I don't think that they're necessarily the same comparison, but I do think if there is anything, he does see his wife as this very strong, in power individual. I do think that there's a lot of love there, more than there is with art. It's not as transactional as what we see here in Challengers. But there's also,
the husband in Past Lives, if you ask me, is not as big a disappointment as art.
No, he's not. No, he's not. If anything, he's searching for acceptance.
He's not just kind. He knows what she needs in a way that art has no idea what Zendaya needs.
No, he's very much in that, like John Margaro's character in that film is very much like, I know you need to go on this journey to understand this. And there is even like a moment where John Margaro's character meets Teoyu and he's like, holy shit. Like even I would be like, that is a good looking man. Like I would be like, I am fucked in this whole scenario. So like, I got like, there's that always got me like the first go around. It's like, yeah, he explains in bed that night, I am not the typical, I'm the person ruining the happy ending. Right.
I am the one to see that.
Yeah. And that you're going to say, and then bye, you're going to go off with him. And then I'm stuck here by myself. And then she goes, but I'm married to you. And he's, and that is like, you need to remember that, that like, I chose to be with you. I could have flown across the world at any point to be with this person. I'm closing a door here. I'm not opening a romance. Yeah, and I think the second time when you watch Past Lives, it's actually more devastating when you know that, because when you go into the first watch, you are expecting that. But then once you watch it a second time, you know that there is no romance at the end of this. And so you're able to pick up that Nora is through the entire process trying to just find closure. But that still hurts. It hurts.
It hurts, but but you still have the feeling that their relationship is beautiful and that they have this life together and they're writing together. You don't feel that with Art and Tashi.
No, I mean, easily. And I think also too, this is not autobiographical, but I think it is very coincidental. Yeah, it's just very interesting that they are. I think sometimes also too, when you're a writer and you're in the same house and you know this from being with a creative person in your life, you might attract to the same sort of style or material, but the way you're thinking about it could also be a call and response. It could also just be a way to subvert what others are expecting, to be a little bit more creative and interesting, but also kind of deeply talk about subject matters that are not talked about in your partner's, like, because this is a deeply queer film, and he has been unapologetic, like he has not apologized at all about talking about that on the trail and talking with various people about it. He's like, this is, how could it not be? This is the sport of tennis within itself is very erotic. And you have these grown men grunting and sweating and running and yelling at each
Fives.
other. Yeah, exactly. Like in the looks and the intenseness, like the, and then there's something deeply sensual and sexual and vibrant about it, about the sport of tennis. And so I think it's just really kind of interesting. I think we wanted more connective tissue than we probably got. But I'd be very interested to see what the hell they do next, because we know what she's doing next, and he's doing queer, which is the, which is the
Another
next Luka
Luka film.
Guadagnino. Yeah. And so I think that they found a creative process to work together and adapt this material. But
And
and yeah.
irregardless of anything that would be autobiographical, the fact that they both have written two of the most interesting films to talk about relationships, they seem to have a creative partnership that allows them to really think about these things and bring them out. And I heard Justin saying that they're, of course, the first people who read each other's work and critique it in that harsh way that you can when you're close to someone. And just that is fascinating. What about in terms of Oscar? It's only April, but do you see that in terms of the awards year here, is it too early? Is it?
Man, we didn't even really get to talk about that on our show. Yeah, because we just ended up talking so much about this wonderful film. I mean, maybe. I mean, it has made a little bit of chunk of change, which is good for itself. That's always a good thing. I mean, Luca does have Queer coming out, which could also deter this. I mean, I would love to see the three of them be in consideration, although the screenplay to be in consideration. I definitely think Reznor and Ross's score is going to be there. But also too, sometimes directors, they release two films in 1 year and they get celebrated, and sometimes they get left by the wayside.
Oh, so
Luca's
Queer is
real.
actually coming out 2024.
I believe so.
Oh,
Yeah,
I
I
didn't
believe
even
that it
think
is
they
coming
was.
out. I think that they're done with it. I think it's supposed to come out and play the festivals later this year. But I mean, Luca had a lot of success with Call Me By Your Name and Suspiria and Bones and All, not so much. This is definitely different than those. I hope so. I tend to be a little bit more pessimistic, about movies like this, because it is. It's got overtly queer things. It's very unconventional. Audiences have liked it enough for it to be a number one film in a box office, but like, and critics have really liked it as well. But then, critics haven't seen everything. I look at it like this: Past Lives was a pretty undeniable film. It was like the movie we all collectively obsessed about from the first half of the year. It was actually up until Barbenheimer, there was not a single movie that anybody else probably didn't have in their top five that wasn't Past Lives. And so it made sense that that movie then got nominated for Best Picture, because how could it not, right? I know that you and I and Sophia and Eric and everybody at Awards Watch, we really like the film a lot. And but I know that there's tons of more films coming out. It's very rare. We're not getting a lot of great stuff out right now. And so, but if the year is uncertain, like if, some of these movies that we think are fall films fall by the wayside, it could be to its benefit. And I hope so, because I think it's a really fascinating and interesting movie. And I hope it gets to stay around in the awards race. And if anything, also just for Zendaya, Mike Feist, and Josh O'Connor,
Oh,
those
yeah.
performances are so damn good. Like, how could you not want to include them? When we talked about Civil War, like thinking about Kirsten Dunst's performance, like her and Zendaya in like the 1-2 spot right now early on in the year. I'm not as set in stone as some people are and thinking that it's 100% all the way in, because nothing really is at this point. We're only in late April, early May, but I hope so. I hope so.
I hope so too. And it'd also be a very cool for the Oscars if we would get the Diane Kirsten Dunst. I mean, talk about
Oh man.
great people for the carpet.
Yeah.
Some
I
district
well, I mean, like,
linens,
just
some
get
Miami
just get
Spice.
her just get Zendaya on any carpet. Like she is I say this all the time. I'm like, she kills it every time. She is one of the most like must see red carpet people we have. So she knows exactly how to run a carpet. And I think she's fantastic here, and I hope we get more performances like this. I hope there's more roles made for her
And
like this.
directing, which she has mentioned several
I think
times.
she would. She has talked about how much she really admires cinematographers. And if you're an actor, and you're admiring cinematographers, that's usually been the case then that you're going to be a director. So, as much as this movie is from her perspective, it almost feels like she is directing in a lot of ways. She's producing, she's putting her hands in things. So, I would definitely be down to see that. Yeah.
Ryan, tell everyone where they can get your stuff.
Oh, well, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and
That
Letterboxd at
also sounded like an
RamEquate77.
innuendo. Sorry.
I know where you can see my stuff. You're not seeing that. You can find me on all the social media platforms. I just said at RamEquate77. All my work is at awardswatch.com. All my reviews and interviews. If you want to go back and read my interview with Celine Song about past lives, if you want to read the interview that with her husband over Challengers, you can read Eric's interview up on our website at awardswatch.com. We have the Awards Watch podcast that releases every Sunday, and we have the Director Watch series that is released every Thursday.
Thank you so much. Looking forward to the next movie we'll talk about.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much, Christina.
Hello, everyone. My name is Matt Neglia, and I am the host of the Next Best Picture podcast, part of the Film Entertainment Awards website, nextbestpicture.com. On our show, we explore all year long what is possibly going to win Best Picture at the Oscars. We do this by conducting interviews with people within the film industry, holding weekly reviews of the latest theatrical releases, and on our main show, where we dive into various different topics, answer your fan questions, and also do our best to explore Oscar history's past in hopes that it will tell us something new for this upcoming award season race. We hope that you will join us on all the various podcasting networks. We look forward to seeing you over at nextbestpicture.com.